Tracer and welcome. Before we start this week's episode, we just want to give a plug and shout out to our this week's producer, who is Ollie Todd. So big shout out to Ollie, who is part of the Taylor tier on our Patreon. So anyone who pays up to the Taylor gets a producer credit each week for helping fund the show and keeping the lights on and all that. So big diolch yn fawr to Ollie, and we hope you enjoy. This week's episode. Ta-da! Patreon, baby! Oh, and if you want to get across our Patreon, you can figure it out yourself. You're smart people. Love you, bye.
Croeso and welcome to Tales for Wales, the pod that never fails to prescribe you the finest in historical whimsy and get you fighting fit for those riffs and tins you know and love. I'm Jack, and as always, I'm joined by what I'd like to call the nurse of the podcast, my good friend Franco. But today, we also have an extra special addition to the pod. The doctor is in the house. It's Mr. Stephen Owen Rule, a.k.a. Dr. Cymraeg.
Don't introduce me like that. Play it down, boys. Play it right down.
As we said before we started, the new spokesman of the Welsh language is here tonight. He's here to allay any questions, any concerns, the future of the language. He's here, and he's here ready to settle it and solve our problems.
Honestly, this is not what you had me sign up for. None of what you've just said was appropriate in any manner.
Well, we should probably
sidelined you.
We should probably explain for people who are coming over from your fans that we are traditionally a Welsh history podcast where we each week go through a different moment in Welsh history. But we ourselves are absolute amateurs, but we have a real love for all things Welsh. And as enthusiasts of the Welsh language, both second language speakers, well, what would you call it? We learned it in school, but we grew up speaking English.
Because we spoke English at home. But we were like a whole education basically in Welsh, wasn't it? Well, mine was anyway.
Yeah.
You've opened the can of worms already, see, because I would consider myself second language, but I was English speaking at home and in school. So I don't know whether I consider you. We'll put ourselves all in the second language category for this evening. Yes. All right, I've got you.
And lots of our listeners really enjoy your content online, and we really enjoy it because you make it very accessible. And I think a lot of our listeners enjoy us because we make Welsh history quite accessible. And I think both, like, Welsh language can be quite academic in school, and Welsh history isn't really taught that a huge amount in school. So I think we have a nice crossover of listeners here tonight, and we're going to go on an adventure together, mostly in the Flintshire region, but we're going to have
it's a real melting pot tonight. I'm excited. I'm looking forward to it.
I just choked up my on thin air then.
So excited you couldn't even breathe. Yeah. I love it.
What's everyone drinking to start off with?
Oh, lads, I'm going to let you down. I was tempted. I was going to grab myself a bottle of Wrexham Lager, and I thought, do you know what? This is perfect. You know, my neck of the woods. And I've settled on a Vimto.
Oh no!
I'm so sorry.
No, we'll edit that out.
Yeah, you've
yeah. Right. Let's just
get the bit where I said Wrexham Lager and just squeeze that in. So, yeah.
I was gonna have Wrexham Lager, but I had a Wrexham Lager. Oh, cool.
Yeah, that's how it works. Yeah.
Well, I haven't been feeling very well this week, and me and Jack just did a road trip for the podcast, and it's broken me. It's like physically broken me. I've been so tired since.
It's like everyone we do, we come back like less and less of a person than we first started. But this one's taken its toll.
We went to visit Llywelyn Ein Llywelyn, the last native prince of Wales, cave in near Bilth, and it was an amazing experience, but we then overdid it on the. We had Morladron, which is pirate rum, and it just absolutely destroyed. We had to drive home through the mountains. It was a lot.
Yeah,
it's not a drive you want to be doing if you've had a Morladron.
I had to pull over in Bilth, and we sat in this cafe for so long because I couldn't face getting back.
You just
in the
needed
car.
to like gather your thoughts. I'm not going to lie, Franco, I love you, mate, but you were not the most high-octane company in, for that hour either. We just like pushed around our breakfasts and I was going, what are you going to do when we get home then? Don't know. I just don't know.
I just hope nothing can make us home.
I need to come on a road trip with you guys. I think that's the next one. There's the next episode.
Oh, that's it. We'll come up to Flintshire. Oh, we'll meet halfway. We'll do a road trip. That sounds ideal. But I'm on the curling tonight though, trying to get back on. Because I've had you can hear the for authentication.
Snap.
There's the second one of the night, but it's been the first one was going down like lead. But hopefully the second one's better. What about yourself?
Always believe in it. Always in Burton on Trent's finest, mate. I'm on the same thing, to be honest. I'm on the same thing. What more do you want when you're suffering? You need something nice and tasty than fucking piss lager like Carlin.
Weak, watery lager. And I suppose you're on something la-di-da?
No, I'm on the Carlin, mate. Like
you're on it
Burton's
as well?
On Trent's finest, yeah.
Oh, you were on it. I thought you just
don't
just
take my flippant comments as as derision. It was an endorsement.
Beautiful. Well, because this might be quite a long one with the three of us on instead of our usual rambling intros. We're going to do some facts around Flintshire because that's where our esteemed guest is from. And we're also going to do some Welsh etymology or just some interesting things we think about the Welsh language. And to be fair, we haven't neglected Flintshire from our recordings before, but we've not done one specific to the area. So we thought we'd all try and come up with a little bit of history for it.
All right.
Yeah.
Who wants to start? What's maybe Jack starts? I know his bit of history is old. And then I kind of carry on from where Jack finishes. And then I think the doctor himself. You've done some research as well, haven't you?
I'm loving every part of my county and the history that goes with it. So do you know what? I was going to ask you guys if you could go first, just because I don't want to cover anything that you guys chuck out there. So I'm intrigued about this now.
Cool.
This is where we've all got the exact same thing, isn't it? Like this would be typical of this podcast.
I checked with people beforehand. That's how professional I am these days. So we're all good.
We've come a long way.
Do you want to start off first?
Sure, yeah. Okay. So my little factoid about Flintshire. So modern day Flintshire, as it stands now, would have been inhabited way back when in the Iron Age by a Celtic tribe known as Deci Angli. I have no idea if I'm pronouncing that right. It might be Deci Angli. I'm not sure, but Deci Angli is how it thinks to me. Unlike some Celtic tribes, the Deci Angli actually, sorry to say, surrendered to the Romans pretty early when the Romans came over in, I think it was 40-something AD. But they built a fort there that doubled as the Celtic's tribal capital. And this was in the Conwy Valley, and it's a place called Canovium, the fort. The Romans actually worked with the Deci Angli, which was a very unusual thing for the time, because the Celts were great craftsmen, metal workers and things like that. The Romans worked with them to make lead and silver, trinkets and sort of sellable items of lead and silver, which was abundant in the area at the time, apparently. And at an archaeological site there, they found two lead sows. And I thought sows might be like a metalworking term for something specific. It's not. It's literally just two like little
two big pigs.
Two big metal pigs. No. Yeah. And these things both weighed 200 pounds, almost 200 pounds each. So these are big old piggies as well, big old metal piggies. But they had the inscriptions, and this is again something quite rare. That the Roman inscriptions there, how they would inscribe all the metals with like sort of the name of the craftsman and the date it was made and everything. But they actually credited the Deci Angli tribe in there as well.
Wow.
on these big piggies. So yeah, that's my little tidbit for Flintshire. So yeah, I love that it's like, oh, we got all these lovely resources, what should we do? Oh, smelter two massive pigs.
Yeah, I love that. I wasn't aware of that. That's incredible. I mean, you mentioned that Deci Angli, as I say. I mean, there's a place in near Conwy now called Deganwy, which is straight from that name as well. And I'm not surprised to hear about the pigs, to be honest, because pigs are massive in Welsh and Celtic mythology. So it really doesn't, and in Irish as well. So it doesn't surprise me about that. What surprised me is the blinking size of them, the fact they'd go to that extent to make them.
You would think, wouldn't you, if they were selling these like trinkets and things like that and weapons and God knows what they were making, and it was actually, they had an economic effect on the area, why would they go, let's waste two lots of 200 pounds of lead
you
on making these big sows?
That's it.
I'm thinking economically. Where's the artist?
Always thinking economically. Yeah. Always driven by the money, not by the pigs. We've done quite a bit on Celts, but we focus more on South Wales, haven't we? So to hear them work with the Romans seems pretty rare and quite unique, because usually the Romans pretty harsh in how they treat the locals. I'm assuming
you can see how it was a bit of a tit for tat kind of relationship. Though, like I said, they made this barracks, almost this fort, to house the Roman infantry there, but they let the Deciangular. How did you say it, Doctor Cumlaig?
Don't now, because you put me on the spot. I've always said Decangli. I don't know whether it's Deciangli though. You're making me question myself.
But we always struggle. I can imagine getting a little, the fact that they got a bonus out of it is having like a tribal centre. Mm. That kind of, you can sort of see that symbiotic relationship.
Scratching one another's back and stuff. Yeah,
exactly.
Well, my bit of history, I'm kind of going to do like I knew you were going to finish after the Romans, so I thought I'd do like a potted history for our listeners who might not know too much about the area. And I thought I'd cover from like a potted history from the Romans up until the conquest of old Eddie Longshank, so Edward I. So once the old Romans finally effed off out of there at around 410, even though they left most of Wales by 383, they left like the whole of the UK by 410, and then Flint itself became something like a buffer zone. It was like the sausage to protect the egg from the beans on that Alan Partridge style sketch. So this buffer zone was used between the growing power of Gwynedd and the continued advance of the Anglo-Saxons in Mercia. And also, we mentioned already some relationship with Ireland. That area was specifically used to having Viking raids from Dublin. So you had this like melting pot of quite... Well, we said melting pot so much already tonight, but I'm sure it'll come up more.
It's a great analogy.
It became really battle-hardened because it was kind of switching hands an awful lot. And he actually got given the name Perfeddwlad. And I hope I said that right. But it's like a contraction or like a portmanteau of the word Perfedd from the Middle Welsh Perwed. And the Proto-Brythoneg, I can't even say the word, but it's like... It's the per and the medius, and so it essentially translates into middle country, like conjuring this image of like no man's land between the powers of Gwynedd and Mercia, places like that. So they'd call it the Perfeddwlad. Perfeddwlad. Yeah. And if anyone wants to spell it, it's Perfeddwlad. But even before Gwynedd, back in the 7th century, there was a place called Bangor Is y Coed, or Bangor Is Coed, before 1974, which was in the historic county of Flintshire. There was a significant monastery established there by Saint Dinuaid, and it became this greatly important Celtic religious centre in the 5th and 6th centuries. That was until some brute king from Northumbria came and smashed it all up in 16 AD, and he defeated the Welsh, led by Brochwyl, at the Battle of Chester. And this scholar, he wrote that there was 1,200 monks were slaughtered in the attack. And today there's no like physical trace of this monastery remains, and even the site is uncertain. But the slaughter was recorded as being so vicious that the story was carried on for centuries before it was penned down properly again. And then after this rather devastating attack, it left the place quite undefended for a while, and it became a part of the Kingdom of Mercia in the 8th century. And the area around Flint came under the control of the Saxons, and it's sited in the English side of the territorial dikes. So you know that you have the Offa's Dyke and the lesser known one, Watts Dyke? That side of the border.
Yeah. Oh, to be honest, where I drive around my area, there's roads that are on Watts and Offa's Dyke, so you can literally, you're still in Flintshire, but you look one side and historically you're looking out to what was Mercia, I suppose, a place like that. So it's absolutely bonkers to be in that part of history. Yeah. So it's great.
Joyride in the old Mercian joyride. Right. You're right there in the middle of it.
Yeah, the Perfeddwlad.
Indeed.
But, So it kind of shows that, so it's kind of crossed over a few times, and then by 1920s, in Rhythlan, some 14 miles further west of Flintshire, there was a Saxon frontier post, and it might not have properly functioned. It might have been quite mutually advantageous for both the English and the Welsh, because when it would cross hands, it would also help guard against the Vikings, who were again still raiding. So thanks to the Mercians building a bit of a stronger fort there, it became, or this outpost there, it became a place for whoever was in charge at the time could use it for protection. And
you see that a lot, don't you, with like when the Romans buggered off all those forts and stuff, that all the native Brits, well, for the most part, especially in the like west, sort of reclaimed them, and they like become strongholds.
That's where their strongholds came, yeah. And then in 1066, the area changed hands several times again, emphasising this area is like properly battle-hardened border town that was like rather relentlessly attacked from each side. However, by the time the Norman conquest came, it was properly in the hands of the English and was effectively owned by Edwin of Mercia. And the Domesday Book of 1086, which was created by William the Conqueror, which was that book used to check what lands were owned by English noblemen and how much they owed them in tax. So it was like a big tax book that they'd go around saying, okay, you own this much land, you owe this to either homage or those stuff. You know, I think we'll do a proper episode on that, because even though it's mostly for English places, examples like this show that it came into Wales as well.
And Doomsday it kind of shows book sounds like a much more grim thing, much more exciting thing than something that just was on about taxes. And
well, it's spelled Domesday, so but lots of people pronounce it Doomsday Book, but it shows like the extent of the English colonialization of the area. Since like the modern county of Flintshire is heavily represented in its pages, but then Denbighshire is largely invisible, and lots of the areas in Flint. It mentions lots of the areas there, like Coles Hill and Ledbrook, which were called like Latbrook and Coles Celt. And this area is largely, there's not many Welsh origin names there. There's lots of English and Scandinavian, which is something we covered in our Viking episode. And then the 200 years between the conquest of England by William the Conqueror and the final defeat of Llywelyn in 1282, there's a relatively, like this relatively small area of northeast Wales was once again like home to some brutal warfare. And Owain Gwynedd, who we've covered before, took full advantage of the English Civil War, the earlier one between Stephen and Matilda, by seizing this Pedferth lad in 1150, and he fought off like several English attempts to regain the territory. There was quite a few attempts during his time, and even though it was kind of a short-lived thing because he had to like give back a part of the land that he regained in his conquest and stuff, again it just shows that the area there is constantly switching hands, which must be so scary if you lived there. Like imagine just being in this part, you don't know where you're, like who's going to be in charge from one day from the next, and how intense. And like I just picture now. You wouldn't imagine if you were in like a civilian there, and you had Owain Gwynedd as your king for one day, and then it switches over, and you're getting stabbed in the back because you were being loyal to him, and then you know crossing over for that. It'd be stressful enough growing up in those times, but to have in your land literally change country, like well, we know they were more like kingdoms back then.
The talks down the pub would be fraught, wouldn't they? You'd be going, oh, who's in charge this time? Jesus Christ, Owain Gwynedd coming in this time.
I didn't vote for him.
He's not my king.
But then in 1272, Edward I came to the throne of England after spending years on crusade, and attempting to strengthen what remained of the Christian holdings in the Holy Land. So Edward I, we've covered loads, he is this terrifying king who had become battle-hardened fighting in the Holy Lands, and we mentioned him a bunch of times, but his ascension to the crown was quite simply one of the worst things to happen to Welsh independence. And he was this dangerous adversary of the era, like the big bad guy of the time. He's in the film Braveheart. He's depicted there by Malcolm McDowell, I think it is. But he's just this.
McGugan, is it?
Something like that. I should have checked his name beforehand. But he's fantastic. As we always say.
Yeah, he's great.
But he's called Longshanks because he had long legs. He's really big for the era. They say he's over 6 foot tall. He's been fighting for a very long time, and then he came back to take over the rest of the UK. And he'd learned the hard way of how to operate an army in unfamiliar territory. And where his father beforehand, Henry II, had failed, who'd constantly tried to invade Gwynedd and Flintshire and all those places in the north and failed, Edward came back much stronger, and he knew what to do and knew how to win. And From his time in the Holy Land, Edward, he came to understand the importance of building castles and securing territory. And that's one of his main successes against Wales and in the Scottish Wars. So Flint Castle itself can trace its DNA back to those in the Middle East because of how he used the same tactics over there as he did when he came back to Wales. So that's a pitted history. Is it potted or pitted? Potted history of Flintshire in Wales before 1282.
That's incredible.
So that was a long
whistle stop tour, mate. No, it's good. Yeah, that's a lot of information in a lot of time. I think my brain's got grown several in diameter.
Yeah. Well, I think it's just crazy that quite a small area. It just like could you just have? I'd love to go metal detecting up there and just seeing how much like how much you could find, because it just seems a place that was just intensely
the breadth
brutal.
Of history as well. Never mind just how much you'd find. Just it could come up from any time in history.
Yeah.
I mean, listening to what you were saying there, I was when you started, I thought, yeah, I'll know all this. And do you know what? There was so much in there. I was just thinking, gosh, I don't even know where I live anymore. It's incredible, boys. I mean, you mentioned no man's land and things like that, and I'm gonna firmly sit on my little self-made pedestal here. I went on Radio 4 about a year ago.
Wow!
I know.
Now this is
with a guy called Mike Parker. What was that? Sorry,
he just had to name drop, didn't you? I'm not
I'm going to name drop you guys after this evening, so look out.
But, yeah, never go on their podcast.
Not ever. No. No, but there was a guy called Mike Parker from, I believe he's from Kidderminster himself, and he likes his history, but he did a book called All the Wide Border.
Oh, what a good book. It's amazing.
Mate, it's incredible. But he was doing the part of sort of Flintshire, Wrexham, Borderlands, and he mentioned this sort of no man's land. And even today, mate, you can feel that people don't know how to identify with themselves.
Yeah.
And it's a very, very strange place that there's just, it feels like it's, even though the people themselves haven't been, oh, I'm Owain Gwynedd today, or today I'm Mercia, or whatever else, you know, it just seems to, I know this seems a little bit, I don't know how to describe it, but it's almost in the land that if you live in that land, you don't know where you belong. And it's a strange, strange feeling. And
to keep, go with your land sort of metaphor there, mate, it's like, if you're not a part of a greater whole, if you like, for long enough, that sort of seed doesn't take root, does it, of your like identity,
that's a great
or
way of
national
putting it.
Identity. Oh yeah, mate, when I thought that up, then I was like, I gotta say this is gonna land.
I think that can be true for lots of the border towns, especially like mid Wales and the northeast, because like places like West Wales have quite a strong identity, like North Wales has a strong identity, South Wales has a strong identity, even though that itself, you know, it's people from very North Wales would say, oh, that's not as Welsh because it doesn't speak Welsh as a first language or whatever. There's more of a, you have a united history for a long time against, like, you know, the Normans, etc., all that stuff. A town that's always passing hands, I imagine it's I was listening to a podcast this morning. What's it called? Parenting Hell with, who are they? Rob Beckett and Josh Widdicombe. So two comedians who have, you know, very, very little knowledge of Wales. And, you know, that's not what their remit is. But they mentioned today people in Wrexham, because they used to do lots of gigs in Wrexham. And they always say they feel sorry for the people in Wrexham, because people in Wales were like, oh, you're not Welsh enough. And then people in England go, well, you're Welsh. So, like, they feel like this, oh, where do I belong kind of thing. And if two comedians from the south of England kind of pick that up when they're there, I think, well, it must be pretty palpable.
I agree with you, and I've never really put my finger on it myself, or I suppose never really taken any time to consider it myself. But you're right; it is. You know, I mean, my wife's from Porthmadog, so she's very much West Wales, and so you know, I do get the old, you know, she'll give me a couple of jibes now and again in good faith. But honestly, it does happen. I mentioned Radio 4 before.
Oh no!
Yeah, I filmed for SRC about a year ago as well, right? Yeah, you look out. But honestly, though, I was doing this program called Am Draw. It's actually coming out in a couple of weeks on S4C, we were up in sort of the, you know, Eryri, we're talking Gwynedd, big mountains, you know, and we sat up there, and there was these. We were just preparing to have a chat with to do more of the filming. And there were two other people who were up there. They weren't filming with us. They were just out for a stroll, right? And one of them went up to me and said, oh, Tin Shara Cymraeg. I was like, doing trio. You know, I'm trying my best, like. And they came out and they said, so Llertin Dodo, where are you from? Llertin Dodo. And I said, oh, doing Byw yn Wrexham. And they said, and the first thing they said in Welsh was, oh, do you know why there's a Welsh flag in the Penmaen Mawr tunnels? So literally about halfway in Wales, there's tunnels on the A55, the sort of North Wales expressway. The part of it goes through a mountain, essentially. And in that tunnel, there's a big Welsh flag. And they say, do you know why there's a Welsh flag there? And I said, oh, is it because that's where Wales starts? And she looked at me with the straightest face and went, yep. Do you know, and I just feel like, you know, I just felt like, really?
Yeah.
You know, mate. We've said a few times on this pod before, in one of our archived episodes that's never ever going to see the light of day, right? Like a top 10, top worst of things of Wales. And in the top worst, one of them we said was like the gatekeeping of Wales and Welsh and stuff
of
like that.
The language.
Because that is such a detriment to everything, to Wales, not just Welsh as in the language, but like as in the culture and like the feeling part of it and stuff.
It's rare.
Such a detriment.
No, I agree. It's rare, but you know, it will take a big, it will take a culture shift. It will take people to say, you know, the amount of people who'd say, oh, it's in Shara Cymraeg, do you speak any Welsh? And they'll go, no, I don't speak any. When they probably do, if they were to say and be honest and say, look, my Welsh is pretty limited, that's so much more powerful.
Yeah,
definitely.
We went to school in Barry in South Wales. The first Welsh language school in the whole Vale of Glamorgan. So there was only 2 years above us. And the school next to us used to throw mud and bricks at our window going, you Welsh cunts, you Welsh cunts. And then... And we were... but then, so my friends who went to that school, they left at year 11 and they went to Barry College. Then they went to Cardiff College, some of them did. And my mum was a teacher there. And she'd see their forms. And on that form, it would say, what is your Welsh language? And they would say, like... non-fluent or like, you know, if there was five categories and one being the lowest, five being the highest, they'd put themselves at one or two, and they went to the whole Welsh medium speaking Welsh, and they were so low in confidence that they would say that their Welsh was one or two. My mum would be like, your Welsh is four or five, like you can understand an entire conversation, you can reply the entire thing, just because you don't know every treiglad, every mutation, just because you don't know, you know, the right. It's like, imagine, no one in English knows all that stuff, but in Welsh you're sometimes pinned to a higher. It always feels like a test when you're speaking it, and you always feel like the other person might be judging you.
We really need to get out of that. And it's going to take some time. But I could not have put it better myself. People really do look at themselves and think, my Welsh has to be perfect before I can, because I think because it is a very literary language. You know, it was one of the first literary languages in Europe, and I think, I don't know whether that's sort of drip fed through into us now, where we think like, if I can't use it perfectly, I don't have a right to use it. And that couldn't be further from the truth.
We're quite a low confident country as well, I think. Yeah. So like a lot of things like that, we get, you always panic. Someone's going to say, hey, do you think Shara Cymraeg can go, you're not speaking Welsh properly. It's like, as if anyone would ever do that. And if they did, it's shame on them.
They wouldn't. Exactly,
no, they never would they?
I think as well, that like the sort of... from you know, personal experience, certainly, and I'm pretty sure you'll agree with me on this, Frank's going through Welsh education, you are sort of chastised is a bit of a harsh word, but you are corrected constantly. So you get a treiglad wrong, a mutation, you get you get the gender wrong of an object, you're corrected. And I think what you were saying there, old Doc, was about I love calling you Doc, by the way. It's such a cool
name. I love it as well.
I feel like I'm in fucking Back to the Future or something. It's great. But the it's like you were saying about, there is, because it's one of the oldest sort of literary languages in Europe, I think. Anyone maybe in the generation above us, you know, that would be our teachers in school, it's really hammered home to them what a prestigious thing it is to know this language, and what a privilege it is to have a language that's so old and ancient, and you're speaking it now in the modern day, sort of thing. I think maybe that, although that's a great point, that prestige goes through, and then it sort of doesn't leave a lot of wriggle room for making the mistakes, you know.
I think that's why your stuff is so good, because my partner's from Manchester. never spoke Welsh before, and now through, because she knows it's important. Well, it's important to me, but I would never make that someone else's agenda. She just loves learning it, so she's learning it on Duolingo. But she follows all your videos, and your videos are so accessible.
Did I tell you that I helped out on the Duolingo course?
Did you really?
And also Radio 4. I went on that once.
Oh, yeah.
That's amazing.
Wow, I did. So I was nowhere near the brains behind it, but I'm still in touch with the sort of lead guy on it. He's absolutely fantastic. But I did a bit of moderating a few years ago, so to be able to do that and be part of that was incredible. And to know that it really does help people. And look, I've learned other languages via Duolingo, and it'll never get you all the way there. But no. I tell you what, like, I could have a chat with someone in Irish or in French, and I would put that down 90% to Duolingo.
That's so good.
Oui, ça va indeed. Honestly, I really could.
Yeah.
It's brilliant.
We got you on here because we thought I wanted to call you Doc a few times, and now you're telling me you've got your finger on the pulse of the linguist's heart in this country.
Emma, she can say, like, we always have a laugh with it, but she'll tell me her favourite things are milk and sausages and stuff. And we'll have like a silly conversation around it. But then when we went to Harlech, we went into a shop where it was like Welsh language friendly, and seeing her like ask for things, for like a candle.
That's amazing.
Stormy outside. It was so cool. And she was buzzing from it. And I just think that's the excitement of a language. And it doesn't matter.
And it really is. And that's, you're right. And I think you were trying to bring up there that you know, that I try and make the language
really accessible.
Definitely. I try to, yeah, and I think, and because it wasn't accessible to me. I know you guys mentioned you were in Welsh medium education. You know, I never had that, and I was all my education was through the medium of English. So, and everything I had at home was through English as well. And so, I always found that it was finding ways to make it accessible.
How did you get over the barrier of it being quite a daunting language to learn, and at least we were kind of thrusted into it, you know, we had so how did you get about getting into it?
I always tell people the same sort of anecdote, I think from sort of the age of 12 or 13, Welsh was sort of like, I felt like it was something I was good at, which was quite rare for me in school, and I found it was something that I could really enjoy. But then I found as I got further and further, it made me quite unique. And especially being in a place where I was so close to the border all the time, as we've mentioned already, being so close to the border, you know, you do notice, you know, every Wrexham game is a Wales-England game, do you know what I mean? And my mother's from Chester, but, you know, we can't all be perfect. You know, we've got, sorry to say Chester, you're allowed swearing, don't you? I'm allowed to say Chester, yeah? All right, boys. So I always had that sort of banter in my life, and I found that Welsh made me a bit unique. The problem is there are a million and one reasons to learn Welsh, and only one of them is the wrong reason. And the wrong reason is because you don't feel Welsh enough. Chuck that right in the bin. You are Welsh enough as you feel, right? Don't worry about that. Yes, the language helps, and it's a beautiful thing to be part of. Don't get me wrong. But it, you know, not being fluent in the language just yet anyway doesn't mean you're any less Welsh. But I felt that at the time. So aside from it making me feel unique, I really felt like I wanted to do it to really cement, saying, no, look, you know, I've got every part of what it means to be Welsh. And I look back now, and that was naivety at best. But, you know, every other reason you might have for learning Welsh is the correct reason. But don't do it because you feel any less Welsh. But that's what I did. And I went through GCSE, and it was, the teachers were wonderful, but the provision, and I'm a teacher myself now, and I'll put myself in this, the provision, it's just, it's not good enough. Fundamentally, it's flawed. I did A-level, and I could come out and I could tell you in the poshest Welsh that a poem was written by so-and-so, but I couldn't even ask you how you were. I wanted to do history. I wanted to read history in university. And I got to the point in sixth form where I thought, I will not be happy in my life until I'm fluent in this language. And I ended up reading for Welsh and the Celtic languages. So it even changed the way I wanted to go in my life, really. But I really wanted to do it. And I know I'm a rare case. I know I'm a head case at the best of times. But I know. I did it for the wrong reasons, but I'm still glad I did it, if that makes sense.
I think the sentiment there is amazing, and I think we fully back that here as Welsh as you
definitely
feel. And I think what Welsh language does is it does connect you to a history, because it's such an old language. So that's a way of feeling more Welsh, in the sense of feeling what ancestors spoke, but it doesn't define how Welsh you are. And I think,
not to put it back myself.
That's something we had a lot as well, I think, growing up. Like us, people next door to us in Barry Boys would literally, I think it was a way to like wind up your rivals, even though they themselves were Welsh. They used to, I think there was a little bit of, I don't think jealousy or bitterness, but I think they felt a little, because Welsh, like Barry is a very rugby town as well. They saw, if
there was as if definite element of maybe like because we were learning through Welsh and not English, almost like, oh, you're better than us, you.
Yeah.
Type thing. Slight, that's what I felt.
You know what? Maybe
it.
So.
And also, our school had so much more money poured into it because it was a Welsh language school.
Exactly. We had that sort of the resources, but because of it was, the first one, especially in the Vale.
It was crazy how different the school's quality was.
We used to tell people, didn't we, that people couldn't believe that we were in year 7, 8 or whatever. We had these like whiteboards touch pens and stuff. And honestly, did we need those? Did that make us like learn through the medium of Welsh better? Not at all. But because the money was being thrown at the wall, it was just that. I think that was the kind of thing. And then Barry Boys probably hadn't had a lick of paint in.
Well, that's the thing. My friends who were in Barry Boys, we were like, we had low. Like, luckily, our group of friends got on really well with lots of people in Barry Boys. But I remember used to speaking to them, and they just felt like a different experience going to school in these two places. Were literally, we shared the same school field, and we just we had to change our class times because they used to beat us up because they were so much stronger and bigger than us because there were so many more years. So they had to leave school at 3:30, and I can't remember what it was, but there's like a half hour gap between because they used to batter us when we left. But
the ones who didn't lunch times and break times, wasn't it? Because everyone used to get beaten up.
Funny. I think. Did you have a fact for Flintshire? Because you were going to cover one, and I don't want to.
No, I would. Do you know what? I'm gonna. There's so many things I could have talked about, and I'm thinking off the top. I'm thinking the Mould riots in the middle of the 19th century, and the reason I'd have thought about that was because it started in the village I grew up, largely because of not being able to speak Welsh and pay conditions, and it ended up in a riot. So I could have talked about that one. You've mentioned the Vikings. I was thinking of Maenach Wyfan in Chwitffordd, just up the road from me. There's a beautifully carved Viking stone up there. You've mentioned the Normans. We've got loads of Norman castles up here. My favourite one is, I can see it out my window now if it wasn't so dark. It's about 200 yards away, given away where I live, called Castell Caergwrle, Caergwrle Castle, as we say in English. And if you look at that, it's a Welsh-built castle that was improved by Edward. So you can actually see English and Welsh masonry stuck together. It's incredible. Obviously, the Iron Ring and things like this. I thought of the Mould Cape. I'm kind of going to chuck this one sideways now because I told you I was going to talk about the Caergwrle Bowl, but I'm actually going to slightly morph into some place that gets absolutely zero airtime. So I'm going to thank you in advance for allowing me to talk about this for a second. Cut him off.
Wait till you hear the edit, mate. Yeah, just don't thank us too early.
The edit will just be me talking about the Caergwrle Bowl, like you said. to be fair, again, a stone's throw away from where the Caergwrle Bowl was found. So definitely, your listeners need to Google that. But there's
we'll dedicate an episode to it. I think with we'll have you back on for that on a later.
Don't tempt me. I'm already having too much fun here. Don't tempt me. But there's a burial chamber. We're talking probably late Neolithic, early Bronze Age, and there's absolutely no mention of it at all anywhere. And there is one. That's hence where I found it. So I've been up there a few times. It's very, very battered and flattened and farmed. But there is something there. I mean, the village next to me is called Kevin Abeth, which is for the non-Welsh speakers, the ridge of the grave, behind the grave sort of thing. So there is this underlying notion of there being some sort of burial site here. And I found an old tithe map from about 200 years ago, 150 years ago, or one was presented to me by a good friend of mine. And on that, it was labelled as being a tumulus. but it was labelled as what's the term in English? The old hag's apron full, or the witch's apron full.
Right.
Which was just beautiful connotations of, you know, this devilish thing, and pagans don't go near these places, you know, that kind of thing. But I thought then, what would that be in Welsh? And I thought, well, that's Barclodia de Gaures, of which there are two quite famous ones, one being in Conwy and the other being on Ynys Môn, Anglesey, where there is a Neolithic burial chamber there. It's actually quite renowned across Europe and the world, really, Barclodia de Gaures. And it just struck me that in this place where we didn't, in the Bronze Age times, we didn't really build with stone in this area because there was plenty of wood, whereas the West, they build with stone because there wasn't as much wood. So a lot of the stuff that we have around here is gone, you know, the evidence of it is totally gone. Mm. So the fact that there is still evidence that we were building in ways similar to those in the West and the rest of Wales and Scotland and Cornwall especially, and Devon and Cumbria and all those old Brythonic places, you know, the fact that we have them here really shows this mishmash of what are we calling it, mixing pot or a melting pot, boys?
Another time.
Drink every time you say mixing pot. Yeah, but no, the fact that, you know, that we've got one here, and I really think we should make a lot more fuss of it. Really,
How do you make it more of a fuss? How? Because I do think we're bad at celebrating our own stuff. And if you're not, can you do a dig? Are people? What's the process of organising digs and things
I think money's the big thing, isn't it? Yeah. I think, you know, if there was money involved, perhaps then we get a bit closer to it. But I've not so much campaigned. I'd say stop short of campaign, but I've put together things that I think, do you know what, just put a plaque there. Just let people know there's something here. And then when money is a bit better, let's see if we can't spark someone's interest in saying, go on, let's have a look, shall we?
That's kind of what me and Frank said before. We've been to a couple of places, you know, especially like these road trips, for example. Like, we were very pleasantly surprised when we went up to see Ogof Llywelyn, or Llywelyn's Cave for the English, because just this weekend gone, we were like, oh my God, this signposted. But it's not like officially signposted. Yeah, someone has put like on a bit of like wood. It's just like hand drawn Llywelyn's Cave. But that is more than a lot of things we've gone to see actually have. You've got to kind of find it yourself and like follow things online.
And there's a romance to that as well, isn't there? There's a lovely part of that as well. Absolutely. However, it's never going to become mainstream if that's the sort of game we're playing.
It's
things
like Owen Glyndwr's castle and stuff, you know, his homestead, that should be far more better maintained and signposted.
Yeah, so, exactly.
Yeah. There was actually today in the news that on Ynys Môn, they found like 16 artifacts from the Iron Age, which was like a giant ram's head and a bunch of things that appeared in a boggy, like sacred spring there. And we've done quite a lot on Ynys Môn for how rich in history that place is. And why it's called Ynys Môn after the Vikings and stuff like that. Why it's called Anglesey, rather.
I think
there's so much underneath the earth. And me and my partner, I may get into all this stuff, but we bought a metal detector and we've not managed to do an awful lot because it's really litigious and like hard work to just go out and do things in Wales and England.
You've got to spend a lot of time for very
in Scotland,
beeps,
it's different. You can kind
thing.
Of you can go a bit more wild in Scotland, but in here, you can only do it freely on the beach without getting permission, which is, you know, I understand, but I just want to know what's under there. And I love the idea of touching something that someone dropped and the last person to have touched it is 1,000 to 2,000 years ago. Like, how mind-blowing is that?
Mad, isn't it? But those opportunities are out there, you know, and it's almost frustrating sometimes. You just sit there thinking, God, I could find one of them. you still lose yourself thinking, that'd be cool. Do I declare it? Do I sell it? You know, staying on my shelf, and I can stare at it all times.
Yeah. Well, we went.
No, it's just like, and the thing is, you'd love it as well. Do you know what I mean? You would look after it, and you know,
it's enjoying.
Yeah.
So we went out with our wives one time with my old partners, and we went out with your metal detector, And we were so excited when we found, and I shit you not, it was probably like an old metal jerry can. And we were trying our damnedest to get that thing out. Like,
so
imagine
deep.
Imagine the sort of excitement and fervor we'd be going for if it was like, oh, it's an ancient Saxon coin or something like that, you know? We'd have been going nuts.
I found a peg in my mum's back garden that was really deep in the ground, but it was a peg I put there when I camped in my mum's garden when I was about 10. And I was like,
no.
I still felt like, oh, the last time I touched this was over a decade. You know, like nearly two decades ago. I loved it.
You doubling over and someone, I'm touching something from 10 years ago.
Yeah, it's because me, it's my own.
Yeah.
I love it. And I think, yeah, there's a lot to be found in Jarius. And I think due to some sad, like, environmental issues, the oxygenation in the ground and stuff means we run the risk of losing a lot of it in not too soon in the future. So if anybody is a budding metal detector, head up to Flintshire and try and find as much as you can.
Give me a shout. I've pretty much located exactly where I live via the sites that are around me, so you might as well just knock for me if you're up here.
You sound like you've got like your metal detector like lent up against the front door, like I'm always ready to go.
You wouldn't believe.
And so they know that we've sent you from the pod, they can just drop a melting pot. That can be our code word.
That's a code word, yeah.
There we go.
A bit like, I've got you. Yeah, I'm with you.
Secret nod. So do you want to, we thought we'd also look at some fun things about the language. And
yeah.
I didn't want this to be like turning the language into a funny postcard kind of thing, but I noted down some of my favourite Welsh words.
Come on.
And then some, I really like the etymology of town names and of place names. Because we mentioned before, like, Welsh is really logical in many ways. So, like, Cardiff, for example, the name derives from, like, the medieval Caerdydd with a Y, which also gives way to the modern Welsh, like Caerdydd. And the word Caerd, because it comes from the word fort. So wherever there's a Caerd in front of it, it means there was a fort there. And then the second part from the River Taff. So it kind of comes from Cardiff, the fort on the River Taff, which people think has come back from like when the Romans occupied it like 2,000 years ago, and we still
it's
say
like
that
today. Phrase, isn't it? Say what you see.
I love it. I really like that. I found one that I thought I hadn't heard of before called Cwm Rhyd Ceirw near Swansea.
Right.
Do you two know about this one?
No. Do
tell. I've heard of it, yeah, but I'm not. Cwm Rhyd Ceirw, I've definitely heard of it, yeah.
So if you break it down, the valley, which is the Cwm part, the ford, Rhyd, and then the Dyr Ceirw. So in Welsh, Cwm Rhyd Ceirw, in English, the valley of the valley of the ford of the Dyr, which is very evocative, isn't it? But that only sort of been written down at the 19th century, and before that, it was called Cwm Rhyd Cwrw, Cwm Rhyd y Cwrw. Which is the bridge
well
of the ford
up
of the
street,
So they changed it with Cwrw to Ceirw because of like Victorian sensibility, so they wanted to try and get away from that. Yeah, so the place used to be called in English the bridge at the ford of the beer, so it was a very heavily drinking town, or where they brewed a lot of beer, but it didn't fit Victorian Wales.
This might be the biggest instance of Welsh oppression I've ever heard.
Lads, this is the next Dr. Cymraeg video. Campaign has begun to bring it back, and we'll celebrate with a pint of ale.
There's a pub there now, which I think like points towards it, which is the name doesn't quite translate, but it was like the deer's drink, and it's a slight like reference to it being the place that beforehand used to be called Cwrw. But it's funny that you only see it written down. So before the 19th century, it was called something completely different. And everyone in the town went, we probably should. Maybe they just had a really bad booze problem. Like, let's change our ways.
I just think all the kids will start vaping soon. It'll be Cwm Rhyd y Vapio or something like that. Just going along with what's there, you know.
So that was my... I think you got one for the country of Wales. So I won't go into to that, but I'll let anybody else throw out some of their favourite Welsh etymologies.
Well, I feel like Jack should jump in here.
I've got a couple here. I'm trying to think which is the most interesting. Well, this is the one that was interesting to me. I was trying to look and find out what did the ancient Celts call themselves, if that makes sense. Because obviously,
that's a good question.
You know, you get all these written accounts from the Romans and etc. what they called them. And I came across this. Now, this was on a few sites. I tried to cross-reference as best I could to try and determine if this was legitimate or not. But apparently, the modern Welsh word, Cymro, which for those who don't know, which is means a Welsh person or a person from Wales, is thought to have come from an old Celtic word called Combrogos, which meant back in the day compatriot or countryman.
Yeah.
So that sort of makes sense in line with it. And that's just sort of where the Cymro in the modern Welsh has come from. So yeah, I was I tried to authenticate this, and a few sites did back it up. Other places, they were a bit more convinced that maybe that it was based off what Romans called Celts and things like that, or the Brythonics. So yeah. I'm not too sure, but I thought that was interesting nonetheless.
It's bonkers you bring that up, because I think for me the first time it was attested was probably William Salisbury in the mid 1500s, and there was a book he wrote called O Synnwyr Pen Cembroi Gyd, which in modern Welsh would be sort of the holl synnwyr, so all the senses or the sort of phrases, I suppose it'd be nowadays, pen cembro of every Welsh person. So it's essentially a list of phrases from the time. But he referred to us as cembro. So the chem in that, like you say, is com or keyed these days, joint. Mm. And the bro in that is another word for glad or tir, which is country. So those who are the same in one's country. For me, with the combroggy bit, I feel like it's an educated guess more than a definite. Obviously, it's not attested anywhere. So if you, the word keyed or com as it was then in Brythonic existed, and the word broggy from nation would have existed as well, whether they were, you know, stuck together as a term and then on top of that used to describe themselves, we can never know. But that is essential. And then obviously the Romans came along and went, well, we'll just call it Cambria then. And sort of went with that. And then obviously you've got Cumbria as well then, and things like that, which is the same thing. But it does all seem quite funny the way that we call ourselves those of the same country. And then you've obviously got Waelas in Saxon English, which means stranger.
Which is like ironic, foreigner, isn't it? Like, and a stranger foreigner.
However,
yeah,
there is a debate in that as well, that it also refers to Roman, and they would use that, the Waelas term, to mean Romans, and obviously we were Romano Britons at the time, and we sort of defended that term really. We use a lot of Latin words, and those people are sort of staunchly very purist in their traditions and language, are actually really very defensive of the sort of the Roman influence, even though it was a total takeover and a wipeout of the Celts at the time. You know, they reset and really defended Christianity and the Romans and Latinization of the country. It comes from that. So there's a good school of thought that the term Wales just means you're a bunch of fucking Romans, really. Which I quite like.
Do they call that the same for the Cornish then?
Exactly that, yeah.
We did an episode on Cornwall, and
I haven't heard that one.
I went to Cornwall.
It's,
I absolutely love the place.
Really, but interesting.
And I found it really interesting. The people there are so similar, and there's so much of the same problems they face that Welsh language faces and small nations face. But they gave me a speeding ticket on the way home, so I've never quite forgiven them.
so we're fucking ate them now. We don't ever talk about them ever again. Yeah.
You should have written an apology in Cornish. I could have helped you with that. And then,
Can you do some Cornish? That's impressive.
Do you know what? I tell people I can speak pretty good. My Cornish is good, but
Cornish.
Well, no, I have to caveat it. People say, oh my God, that's really impressive, right? I studied Middle Welsh in university.
Oh,
if you can speak any Middle Welsh, it's Cornish, okay? Yeah. No disrespect. There's a couple of words that are different. They've got some amazing words. Some of the words they've got. So, guys, a little test for you. What's a sofa in Welsh? Don't overthink it.
It's just sofa, isn't it?
Sofa.
Yeah, exactly that. Sofa, right? In Cornish, gwely jeeth, or in Welsh, gwely deeth, a day bed.
Oh, yes.
Oh, that's amazing.
I mean, I'm not being funny. That's just
so good. Yeah.
Gwely deeth. That's so good.
And so, And you just think it's absolutely incredible. And there's another one, I did a video on it recently. And all right, the term privevio is the term for toilets, but there is a colloquial term for it. And you know, like in Welsh, where we put vat at the end of a word to sort of mean a place. So meddygfa, meddyg from medicus in Latin, so a sort of doctor's surgery. So a place where something happens. Mynedfa, mynd is to go, vat is a place, so a go place, an entrance, right? We do it to make a location. Shit you not, boys, right? One Cornish word for a toilet is pissfa.
That's amazing.
That's not a big joke.
Franco, you say nearly about right, how Welsh is like a say what you see language. Jesus Christ, that's just taking the biscuit.
I'm on this sofa all day. It's as if I'm sleeping here. Well, you should say that.
So
it's
good.
A brilliant
place. I can hear you speak about things all day, mate. It's like I've got like a dedicated Welsh QI person next to me.
Well, I've been on Radio 4 if I haven't told you, so maybe QI might be calling at some point. If Sandy Rodrick wants to get in touch, I can do a bit of that.
Amdraw as well. Amdraw is a good one. I'll definitely watch that for that. We'll make sure we put that in the notes.
I'll give you a message. I'm gonna blast it all over my social media in a couple of weeks. However, no doubt they've made me look like even more of a fool than I am. I don't want to ruin it for you boys, right? But there was a point in it where I think we were in Sir Benfro in Pembrokeshire. Absolutely beautiful. Great people we went around with as well. And at the end, if you've seen the programme, it's like come dine with me, except instead of making food, you take them on a walk in your area, right? Just, you know. And we were taken around Pembrokeshire, and I've never been before properly. I've been to Tea There Wee, St. David's, and then I left again. So I haven't really seen that beautiful part of it. So I got to see it, and we were there, and after we just had some food. And you think, when you watch the episode, you eat the food really quick. You don't. You're filming for about 5 hours before you even get to eat anything.
Yeah.
So by the time we did it, and I was doing an interview at the end, and they said, oeddet ti'n mwynhau'r bwyd hefyd? Did you enjoy the food? Oeddet ti'n mwynhau'r bwyd hefyd? And I said, well, you know, I said in Welsh, it wasn't too bad. I said, but after a long day of walking, and then I switched to English and went, and I didn't even mean this, I promise you. I said, it was just what the doctor ordered. Right, ha, 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 ha.
Ah, very good.
But I took it further because I realised after I said it, I turned to the camera, winked like the biggest strap going, right? And I went, just good what man. Dr. Cymraeg ordered. At which point, I apologised profusely to the director and said,
I've been on Radio 4, please.
Yeah, listen, please, you've got to allow it. Yeah,
it's a real melting pot right now.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say, like, it is when you mentioned come down.
No, but like I said, I'm so sorry I said that. And I said, look, it just came to me. It was just a joke. Let's film it again. They went, nope. Keeping that in. So if it comes up on the show, you have my apologies.
I thought you were going to say then when you mentioned come down with me, I thought you were going to be that guy when you went, someone went, oh, so what did you think of my walk? And someone else beat you. You went, what a sad little life, Jane. And just started on an absolute rant against someone.
I was diplomatic.
Yeah.
And I was honest. So, I can't believe I actually said just what the doctor ordered.
Oh, mate, I'm impressed.
And they said, no, we're leaving that in.
I think it's good. Just,
yeah, awful.
Do you have any favourite bits of some like interesting, like pub? We often do things you can tell in the pub. So like anything, if all you're right, listening to this, that you could take into a pub and be like, this is a fun bit of Welsh trivia.
What I tried to do, and in absolute honour of your wonderful podcast, guys, I wanted to try and really do a Venn diagram, but in the middle of a Venn diagram, a real big crossover. So I've come up with two terms that have sort of historical connotations to them.
Love it.
So, and nowadays we sort of use them as if, you know, we'd say nowadays, oh, every cloud, you know, in English sort of thing, comes from every cloud, silver lining and all this sort of stuff. And then you sort of say dead as a doornail or whatever, all those sort of phrases in English and where they all come from. But there are some amazing ones out there. I mean, the first one is obviously Bwrw Henragedd a Ffinn, which is translates as raining old ladies and sticks. And
oh, yeah.
It's
yeah.
believed that old ladies with their sticks walking down the road would make this tapping sound. Oh, sounds a lot like heavy rain. So you've got that one. Dod at ei goed is to come to one's senses, but it translates as to come to one's trees.
Yeah.
And it's this beautiful connotation of, you know, knowledge coming from nature rather than sort of the head and all this sort of thing. And even the word druid, from which this time maybe even derived, you know, derwydd in Welsh, the word in derwydd for druid comes from derw, which is our word for an oak tree.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's all this connotation of trees being the host of this great knowledge. And I just love that phrase, to come to one's senses.
I love the sort of thing with Welsh as well. I think I mentioned it somewhere recently. I can't remember if I mentioned it in an episode yet, but I was watching this YouTube video, and it was about, funny enough, it was an English guy doing but he's like a professor of like Welsh history and mythology and things like that. And he was saying like the reason Welsh was a very like romantic, poetic language, because like old Welsh and like middle Welsh and things like that, you could say in two lines what would take you a verse in English, you know, because our language was certain words could mean like three different things.
Exactly. You know? I mean, and that's the thing about Welsh, you know, it's not a simple language, but it is a simplistic language in the sense that, you know, one term can cover so many things, and usually that's not a problem. It's just, so ffordd means road and way, gwlad means country and nation and land. It means all those things, you know.
Yeah.
However, there are these beautiful little crossovers that if you can get it right in poetry, hence why we give the chair at the Eisteddfod, you know, because it really is what sometimes you can read a line and go, and it can really hit you, and you can go, wow, like, that's stupidly clever.
Yeah, and that's it. Not just at the sort of, what would you say, what's the English word for, like, swignol? I can't think of that now.
Don't do that to me now. Sort of
I know. Melodious.
Yeah,
melodious. But like you said, it's not just like how lovely it sounds on the ear, but also the cleverness of structuring it like that. Yeah, it's I also read that what's it called, is it Cynghanedd?
Yeah.
We're the only language that has that or something.
Well, it can exist in other languages, but we're the ones who sort of really stick to it.
Yeah,
it's in English. There was, do you remember Young's? They were a fish company, weren't they? They'd sell fish cakes and things. Young's. I think they used to sponsor Grimsby Town Football Club as a laugh.
mate, that's lost on me, fella. But
either way, you're southern as you don't do the round ball, you lot.
I like football, Jack's,
all right.
Yeah, so, but is it Young's fish dish of the day, people?
Is that exactly that? But if you have a fishy,
you listen to that phrase. When was the last time that was on our TVs? If you listen to that phrase, Young's make fish the dish of the day, and you think, hold on a minute, that's clever, because it's saying Young's make fish the dish of the day, but it's also it's telling you make fish the dish of the day. But what you've also got in there is fish and dish rhyme, and dish and day alliterate, which is actually Cynghanedd. And the reason we remember it so much is because Cynghanedd is so incredibly adept at making you remember how to say things and remember these nursery rhymes and stuff like that. We remember them so much. And Young's make fish the dish of the day. You can't say that without sort of singing it. Do you know what I mean? You can do it in every language, but Welsh, we love it. And it's as if don't write poetry unless you're writing in Cynghanedd.
I've got the book of the Gododdin.
Brilliant.
And it's I've got like this sort of like a modern English translation.
I've got that as well.
But it keeps but I can't remember her name now. I can't remember the Gaelic.
She's brilliant. She's incredible.
Yeah, very, very good. And explains, you know, in the foreword and everything about how, you know, bloody shit hot she is about it.
Yeah.
And honestly, if you read like this, like the is it Old Welsh or Middle Welsh? You're gonna have to.
Gododdin would be late Old Welsh, early Middle.
Welsh. You can. Don't get me wrong. I don't understand all of it because I'm, you know, I only know modern Welsh. But I imagine for you probably I can pick up on the ingenuity in it, but. Even reading it, you know, even though I don't know every single word, it's like, the way it just rolls and it's beautifully done, you know?
Mm. If people like retellings and stuff, there's that book I mentioned before in here about the Mab. If you find things like that are quite difficult to understand, they have the Mabinogion, which is the new version by Matt Brown and Eloise Williams, which has like a foreword by Michael Sheen, and it's got the Welsh on one side and then it tells you the English again, and it's like kind of not modernized, but it's told in a way that makes more sense. Like it's
that's like, a good way of putting.
Yeah, when we try to talk about the episode before, like how you have to stand on a goat and you have your foot in the bath, when you read that written down, it doesn't make sense. But when you have it told to you in a story form, how these things should be told, they make a lot more sense. So yeah, we'll put in the show descriptions. If you remember who the book was for the Godot, then I'll put that in the show notes as well. So we'll make
sure
you credit
it. Got it on my bookshelf, mate.
Give me once. I could probably find it, I'm sure.
Well, whilst you have a look... you had a very, I wouldn't say sincere, but that was a really poignant chat around language there. And I'm going to lower the tone by saying I like the word goody who. That's Welsh word for owl.
That is not lowering the tone at all. It was Gillian Clark, by the way.
Gillian Clark,
that's the word.
But you are not lowering the tone. And do you know what? I've got my little boy, he's 3 years old, and I teach him the word tallian for an owl.
Yeah.
However, goody who, I just think,
love it.
why is that not the Welsh word for everything? It's just brilliant.
Yeah.
So yeah, I sort of every time I you'll play with a little toy owl or something, and every time I say the word, oh, it's in whatever to Llian, you're playing with the owl. I just think, I wish my dialect used goody who.
Yeah,
well, that is not that is brilliant. I love it.
Go on, you go first. I was just going to say... Mine's better for a third act.
Just on that, I love that some things just make sense when you look at... So like, pili-pala, the Welsh word for butterfly, is a mad-sounding word sometimes. It sounds very ethereal or otherworldly. But when you think butterflies look mad, they look like they could belong to fairies and you know, whales being very kind of mythological. Imagine seeing an animal like that and a pili-pala.
When I hear pili-pala, my brain goes flippy-flappy. Like in English.
Well, yeah,
you know
why
I mean?
Not?
It kind of makes sense.
The thing is, there's two other words for a butterfly in Welsh.
Yeah.
One is Yarvach yr Haf, which is the little chicken of summer.
Little chicken of summer.
And then you've got Gloin Byw, which can either be it's more of a little live wire in a way, but it can also suggest sort of the old miners with glow and things like that. So there's some really beautiful ones, and I'm so sorry, Jack. I bet you've got a mint one, but you've just reminded me now with this little chicken thing with the little chicken of summer. So a hare in Welsh is an ysgyfarnog, or as some people pronounce it, sgwarnog, right? A hare is in like a rabbit thing, right? However, there is one village, and I mean a village, tiny village in mid Wales called Pennant Melangell, named after one of only two female saints venerated in Wales, actually. And she was said to have saved a hare from a pack of dogs. And she's sort of the saint of hares and things like that. However, in this little village, and I swear in only this village, they do not call them Sgwarnog. They call them Oin Vach Melangell, which is Melangell's little lambs.
Oh,
wow.
And that is the only place where everywhere else it's Sgwarnog or Ysgyfarnog. And you go to that place in mid Wales and they will call them, they'll refer to them as Melangell's little lambs. And I just think, this is what I mean. If we were not to support this language and just give it our best shot, this is the kind of shit you lose, you know?
Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't have one, can you? Like one sort of, that's the perfect way to speak it. Like you said, you lose all these little
history,
lovely little fringes and phrase. Like they're so good.
It's like history. Yeah. Like you learn so much about how, like the etymology is a direct link to your past. And
exactly, it tells you everything. I couldn't agree more. And I'm gonna proper annoy Jack now. And I'm there was one final. You mentioned now about linking to social history. There's one other phrase in Welsh called Talcen Caled, which means there's a you've got a hard job ahead of you. But Talcen is a forehead, and the idea is that I believe that if you've got a strong forehead, it's the kind of thing you're going to need a strong forehead with the miners. You're going to need a strong forehead to go and mine down there because you're going to bash your head. And the story is now it's just sort of morphed into, oh, my Talcen Caled o'ch blaen, you've got a big task above you. But essentially it means you better have a strong forehead. And that's where it, and I just think, I promise I've finished now, Jack. But
no, we love it, mate.
Mate, honestly.
But I love it. And it's just,
the thing I'm going to come out with is really going to lower the tone. So
Jack, I'm up
do
for
the
it.
Good
Let's
stuff.
Go. Come on, I've made you wait long enough, mate.
Okay. You've asked for it now. So... If I don't know if you guys remember the Hreigiadur on the Yes. Do you remember Rhugain did? So for those who don't know, it was like an unofficial collection of Welsh swear words, vulgar Yeah. phrases and the like.
The play kind of like an urban word for it, because like Geiriadur Yeah. is dictionary, Right. and then Yeah. Rhugain
is like swear dictionary, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's kind of like an urban dictionary for Welsh words. Yeah. It's an absolute travesty in my mind that it's no longer around, for one. But one
that's what Dr.
Caride's
for, mate.
Well, yeah, mate, you've got to bring it back.
Fucking Welsh.
Yeah, exactly. But one phrase I remember from it very well, I keep it with me to this day, near my breast, near my bron, right?
Oh, yes.
And it's basically the term for when you have a really bad case of the shits, and it's khaki babbies plastic.
No way.
Or in the English, shit in plastic babies. And I don't know about you guys, but I really resonated with that. And I thought, I've never, you know, such a term is so evocative and can really conjures an image in your mind. So that, yeah, so I'm glad you guys said all the really nice ones before that.
I definitely should have let you go first. I'm here to talk about the wisdom Yeah. of the fucking trees, and you're talking about shit in plastic babies. I just...
Literally,
yeah, I definitely should have let you go first.
Shat plastic babies all over your lovely stuff there.
Well, on that sour note, should we bring things to an end? And well, we were going to have a bunch of questions to ask you, but I think really you've kind of I think they're a bit more conversational than us being a bit more formulaic and saying, "How did you get into this?" But
you've answered a lot of those questions.
Yeah, we kind of know why you got into this and how.
I think I've sort of got my life story in there at some point. Did I mention I've been on Radio 4?
Not yet, but well,
very good.
We'll link to all the stuff that you do, but I'm sure most people know. We just search Dr. Cymraeg. We'd love to get you back on, and if any of our fans who enjoyed this have any other questions or anything they'd like to learn, any of the Welsh language learners have any questions, maybe we can send Yeah. them on to you.
Please do. Yeah.
Because I know loads of people who've listened really, really, really do value what you do, and so do we. So we're really
Absolutely,
grateful for
mate, Yeah.
for being this bastion of Welsh language and making it accessible and funny and just entertaining. It's sometimes Welsh can be so serious, and I think you've really managed to combat that. So diolch yn fawr.
I think you do the same with this. Diolch. I think I was thinking about this on the way here, and I was thinking about why your stuff is so appealing to me and things, because you know these are heavy subjects. These are what shaped us as people, the language, the history, the social history, you know, and to put this bit of a slide, you mentioned sort of being in the pub and just sort of celebrating rather than, and I think you guys do it well too, and I think that's why I reckon, you know, whereas the popularity is sort of gravitating to it, and it's great to be a part of, isn't it? And no, honestly, guys, diolch yn fawr iawn. It's been an absolute pleasure. I could talk to you guys for hours, and next time I'm down in the capital, I'll definitely give you a shout. Like,
maybe I was just about to say, if we're ever up Flintshire Way, we'll be knocking your door, giving you the code melting pot.
Yeah, we know where you live now.
Go for a sesh.
Pretty much, yeah.
Before we let you go, we want to say thank you so much for coming on, for one. But do you want to say to everyone listening sort of where they can find you, you know, what you're about, anything like that? Give them a little sort of the tidbit of sort of who you are and how to find you, etc.
Boys, I'd be honoured. Thank you. Yeah, but honestly, if you just whack Dr. Cymraeg into any sort of search engine, you'll find my stuff. I started on Twitter a few years ago, and that's at Cymraeg Doctor. Madly enough, Dr. Cymraeg was taken. And I'm mainly doing stuff on Instagram now, and aside from having been on Radio 4, I'm also pretty close to hitting. I'm also pretty close to hitting 50k, which is it's absolutely blown my mind, and I'm grateful to every single person who decides to follow. So
we'll get you over that line. That's the job for Tales Wales to listeners. Please go over there and get him over 50.
Come on, lads. Let's
Brilliant.
Do it.
Yeah, so I'm at Dr. Cymraeg there, and I do a couple of things on YouTube. So have a look on there. And I also sell a few books and stuff like that. So if you search Dr. Cymraeg, you'll probably come across those.
We'll put it all in the show notes as well, so you can find it from there. Well, Diolch yn gwrando. Thanks for listening, everyone. We have the Patreon. We have all our stuff. Leave us 5-star reviews. It helps with discoverability and all that malarkey. You know, the stuff we normally shout at you at the end of the episode. But thanks for all the continued support. It does mean the world to us. And we'll catch you all soon. Diolch yn fawr. Cheers.
Thank you all. Cheers now. Ta-ra, ta-ra, ta-ra.